This week on Barbell Shrug, we talk about how to prepare for the Open physically and mentally.
Hey, this is Rich Froning. You're listening to Barbell Shrug. For the video version, go to barbellshrug.com.
Two, one, go.
Oh.
No, wait. Three, two, one, go. No,
welcome to Barbell Shrug. I'm Mike Blitzer here with Doug Larson and Mike McGoldrick. Chris Moore is not with us today. He's in Arizona doing a vacationing thing.
Said he didn't want to be on the show.
He said, screw you guys. I hate you.
He's going to see us say that and be so pissed.
We're not sorry, Chris. Yeah.
Hey, everybody. I'm Chris Moore.
So what we did, instead of having Chris Moore on the show, we fed McGoldrick, who does not consume caffeine, lots of caffeine before the show.
I've drank a quarter of a cup so far. So I'm losing my mind.
He claims he can do the job of himself plus Chris Moore after one cup of coffee. We'll see. We'll see if he can pull this off. There's a reason we brought McGoldrick on. We brought him on because we're going to be talking about how to Metcon faster, how to do your WODs faster, how to get more done in less time, and in a certain amount of time, getting more done. You know the deal, having those broad domains and shit. So, before we get too far into this...
Well put.
Yes. Before we get too far into this, make sure to go to barbellshrug.com. It made sense. Go to barbellshrug.com, sign up for the newsletter, and we're going to inform you of some of the snatch mistakes you might be making. We did a fantastic video with Mr. Rich Froning. And yeah, he has his shirt off, so you ladies out there, you can click that, watch that video.
Woo.
Yeah. maybe we'll make a video with McGoldrick with his shirt off someday. You're pretty chiseled.
I don't know about that.
Are you the fat kid at the CrossFit Games?
I got my winter coat going right now.
Oh yeah?
Mm-hmm. We'll have to wait until the spring. Supposed to be fluffy.
I'm fluffy.
Fluffy season.
Lots of cookies. Brownies.
So we're talking about how to Metcon faster, do the WODs faster during the Open specifically. We understand that a lot of people want to do better in the Open. Maybe you did the Open last year, you didn't do as well as you wanted, or you found that you were doing a WOD and you didn't go, like at the end you're like, oh, I could have gone faster. Or at the end you were dying, you're like, oh, I paced way too hard. That's very, very common, and we're going to address some of those issues.
This Open sounds cool. What is the Open, Mike?
Oh, Chris, thanks for helping me out there. Sometimes I forget about what we're talking about.
Woo, the energy.
Like right now.
Someone else, pick this up. What's the Open?
McGoldrick, what's the Open?
The Open is the qualification process to make it to the CrossFit Games. It's the worldwide Open. It happens every year. Starts in the early spring. It is 5 weeks long.
Yeah, it's been 5 weeks for the last couple of years. The first year it was 6 weeks, and then it's been 5 weeks in 2012 and 13.
Thankfully, they shortened it.
Well, it was meant to be 5 weeks.
That extra week.
Yeah. It was meant to be 5 weeks, and then there was a technical error.
Oh, is that what it was?
Yeah, something happened, and that's why they had to add a week. Something like people weren't able to input their data from the first WOD, and it was, I remember it being a little bit of a hassle.
I do remember they extended the date the first time.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, they extended the input.
So it's usually the month of March every year. Right now it's the end of November, so we got a few months for the next round.
Yeah, we're talking about it based on historical data. So we know how it's operated the last 3 years, so we're going to make some assumptions that this year it'll probably operate much the same.
Mm-hmm.
Dave Castro, don't screw us.
Don't change
things up.
You can't figure it out. There's no way.
I hope he changes all the movements this year. It's like none of the movements you've ever done before. He'll be doing crab walks and for distance, you know, stuff like that. That'd be
fun.
He
was like, who here's run a half marathon before? Everybody was like, I knew it was going to be a long run. He's like, and what about rode it? Oh, shit.
Nobody's rode a half
marathon.
Nobody
thought of that. That was pretty wild.
All right, Doug, so you did some of this analysis. What are the different...
Whoa.
Chris is breaking equipment in here.
Yeah. Got it. We're good.
Yeah. Stick it in the hole. There you go.
Hands off my mic.
So, Doug, you did some analysis. How long are these Metcons? How long are the WODs that we're looking at for the Open?
Well, we talked about this two episodes ago, something along those lines. Yeah. Talked about basically the structure of the Open and how it's looked over the last couple of years. Long story short, you can go back a couple episodes back. What's the name of the episode?
The one that you just mentioned?
Yeah.
92.
It's episode 92. That's the name of it.
So go back to episode 92. We'll give you more details about what I'm about to say. But long story short, the Open's been pretty much all AMRAPs. Every single wad in the last 3 years, 2011, 12, and 13, were all AMRAPs. They range between 5 minutes and 20 minutes, basically. And it was all standard CrossFit movements. There was about half and half barbell movements and non-barbell movements. Snatch, clean jerk, push presses, overhead squats. What are the rest of the barbell movements?
Snatches, clean jerks. I'm just saying the same stuff.
Thrusters.
Thrusters, that's right. I can't remember off the top of my head what the other ones
are. Deadlifts, push press, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Perfect. So basic movements for as far as barbells are concerned. And then for the non-barbell movements, it was box jumps, double unders, wall ball shots, muscle ups, chest to bar pull ups.
Burpees.
And maybe a couple more. So
wall ball shots, double unders.
Nothing too crazy.
You know.
Not a lot of learning involved in the Open. It's stuff you've probably practiced or tried to practice, you know, 1,000 times. There's no heavy sled pushing. There's no yoke walks. There's no running. There's no rowing. They try to make it as accessible as possible to, you know, hundreds of thousands of people all over the
right
over
easily
the
standardized.
Yeah, easy to judge, easy to standardize. That's why, kind of like I said before, there's no running because it's hard to confirm distances for, mm-hmm. for so many people. Some people be, if it's a 400-meter run, some people be running 500 meters, some people be running 100 meters. You never really know. So
he ran out the door.
You know what, though? One thing I think that would be cool is if they, like, everyone can measure 10 meters or, like, 50 feet. It'd be cool if they had, like, some kind of a shuttle,
that'd be really cool.
An AMRAP, you know, like, down and backs or something. That'd be kind of neat.
Yeah.
Totally doable, but.
Yeah, they try to make it sounds so easy, but right, then when you do 100,000 people, it gets
pretty
shaky.
You've got people submitting videos, and it's not in the gym.
Yeah,
then it gets interesting. But the different lengths of the workout. So we're going to talk about how to approach the different types of open wads. So we're going to talk about the different length of time. So you might want to approach that 5 minute AMRAP differently than that 20 minute AMRAP. We're going to talk about some mental preparation. We're going to talk about some physical preparation. And we will talk about specific movements and how to get better at some of those movements you might approach during the Open. There's some skills that things like muscle ups and stuff like that. And then not only that, but you have to do muscle ups after you've done 150 wall ball shots. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's been 2 years that they've done that one.
Yep, 2 years in a row.
Yeah. So I think
a lot of this is going to depend on who you are as a person and what your background is. So we've noticed that a lot of people that come out of pure strength sports, if you come out of powerlifting or Olympic weightlifting or things like football, where it's all very short, very powerful, very explosive, speed type movements or type training, then you tend to do very well at the short, fast, powerful Metcons, because that's basically what you train for your whole life, especially if you're already a bigger person. On the opposite side of things, if you came out of an endurance background, you don't have a whole lot of strength training, and you've gotten stronger over time, obviously, by just, you know, training normal CrossFit type training, but you're probably still naturally, if you come from an endurance background, better at the longer Metcons where the weights aren't quite as heavy and mm-hmm. they aren't quite as technical. So you got to kind of know who you are. You got to know what your weaknesses are, so you can focus on those weaknesses. You got to focus on the things that are holding you back. If you're a person that that can't do one single muscle up, but you crush, you know, heavy cleaning jerks, well, maybe you'd put off cleaning jerks, you know, to maybe once a week for a little while, and you focus on your gymnastic skills, your chest to bar pull ups, and your muscle ups, and stringing those together where you can do them, you know, in a relaxed, consistent, unbroken manner.
Yeah, I touched on this last week. I know. With some people I coach, they've got that requisite amount of strength. They can crush squats now. They're really good at clean and jerk. They have a snatch that's going to get them through the Open. And then you start taking away some of the stuff they're good at and start replacing it with those movements that
limiters.
You have to be good at to do well in the Open. And it's psychologically demoralizing. And I think you were talking about that a little bit before the show, Mike, how, like, this phase of training, you've been kind of doing a bunch of stuff that's just not fun. And how do you approach workouts where you're, maybe for you it's not goats, but it's kind of like it's becoming redundant. And a lot of times I think it's kind of the same type of mental focus that someone would need that maybe is constantly every day working on something they're not very good at? It's kind of like a grind.
Yeah, you know, like, I mean, you've got some athletes that say one year they want to do better in the open and their limiter is muscle ups. They could go all year without doing any conditioning and just do muscle ups, and they're going to do 500 spots better the next year because they can do muscle ups. Right. So like, you got to realize if you have limiters that big, that you need to really address that, you know. So like, your motor could not be any better. You could not be in any better shape, but just do muscle ups, and that next year you're going to get 10 more, and that's going to move you up, you know, hundreds of spots.
Yeah. So getting 20 more pounds on your back squat might not be. If you're squatting close to 400 pounds, getting 20 more pounds on your back squat should probably take a back seat in your training.
I mean, have we ever seen a 100 max back squat come up in the open? No.
No. So unfortunately not.
Is that unfortunate?
I don't know. I'd like to see it personally.
Yeah, to your point, you're talking about that person may not have to do any more conditioning. They just can't do muscle ups. So if they can fix their muscle ups, then they can place so much higher. For a lot of people, you know, there's that big cutoff when it goes from doing wall ball shots or whatever to doing muscle ups. All the people who can't do muscle ups, they're therefore tied.
Yep.
And if
yep.
you can do one, you'll slingshot a thousand places higher. And if you can do two,
and then for everyone, a thousand more places higher. It just keeps going. Yep.
Yeah. So for that person, they need to figure out for all people, you need to figure out what your big limiter is, mm-hmm. and then go deeper than that. So if muscle ups is one of the things that is your big limiter, well, then you got to go even further and say, well, why is that my big limiter? Is it a strength problem? Is it a mobility problem? Is it a technical skill problem? Is it a lack of practice because you have all those other things handled and you just never throw that into your workouts? You got to start digging into all these little subcategories of why that happens to be your problem. Mm-hmm. Find the most important one.
Why'd you do that in front of the microphone?
Am I watching enough technique wads? Probably not.
That's right. You probably watch more. Especially since Mike was the one that did the muscle ups technique.
Definitely.
I think loving that one.
Going back to your point, kind of what you're bringing up now is like finding those limiters, and you were talking about people who come from that strength and speed background, and a lot of times their limiter is that they don't know how to pace. So pacing becomes a huge issue because most of the WADs aren't high skill. I mean, I guess the highest skills in the open are going to be muscle ups and then what chest bar pull ups, which I don't consider like a very high skill. Being able to maybe do butterfly chest bar pull,
pull-ups,
that turns into a little bit more higher skill.
Mm-hmm. The oldest movement. Stuff's in there too, snatches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and doing them more efficiently are going to benefit you, but the weights aren't so crazy that you can't, you know, you can do them pretty poorly or do what I call barbell swings and get away with it. Sometimes,
You're going to benefit more from breathing work rather than bringing your 1RM up. Like if you just know how to breathe better, you're probably going to be able to snatch better at that lightweight rather than, you know, having a stronger 1RM.
If you're snatching over 200 pounds and you do come from that strength background and that speed background, then doing some stuff that helps slow you down can really help out. I know Doug kind of came up with this rule called the 80-80 rule.
Oh, it's great.
Yeah. Since you're the one that invented it, I'll let you describe it.
Sure. Basically, for people that do have trouble pacing, they need something to think about besides just go forward as fast as humanly possible. So what we came up with, and again, I kind of loosely stole this from BJ Penn. He's a former UFC welterweight and lightweight champion.
I want to say he did both. Yeah,
yeah.
He might have been both.
I think he went up a weight class and then got handled by GSP. Is what happened.
Yeah, he's been the champ a couple of times over the years. Anyway, he talks about going at 80% during a fight because he doesn't want to go out too hard, too fast, and then, you know, gas and then get the shit kicked out of him when he's too tired to operate. So he goes out at 80%, which basically means he's still operating at full speed, but in a relaxed fashion. So he feels like when he's at 80%, he can go hard, move fast, but still be reactive to the other fighter because he's not soul, his soul effort and intent isn't just plowing the other guy over with effort. He can go in there, he can actually like be relaxed enough to see what's going on, still move quickly, react to punches, you know, react to what the other guy's doing. If the other guy throws a punch, he can shoot under and do a takedown or whatever. And he does better at 80% than at 100%, which is counterintuitive, but it's worked very well for him. So I kind of took that same model for people that aren't good at pacing, and I told them, since it's the 80-80 rule, to go at 80% full speed for the first 80% of the workout, and then they can really turn it up to 100% for that last 20% of the workout. So say it's a 20-minute AMRAP, you're going to go to 80% for the first 80%, which is 80% full speed for the first 16 minutes. And then those last 4 minutes, you can really turn it up. That way you come and you redline right at the end of the workout, right when you're supposed to redline. That way you don't go out too hard, too fast, and then kind of fall off the cliff, you know, 5 minutes into the workout.
I like using that as a practice tool. Like, you know, do that. That's, you know, do a few of those on a Saturday. Mm-hmm. Do five, that'd be a lot. Or maybe not for McGoldrick here, it wouldn't be a lot, but say you do 3 10-minute AMRAPs and you separate the workouts by, you know, 10, 20 minutes. And you do an AMRAP where the first 8 minutes, you take it nice and easy. You're getting your reps in, just as Doug was describing. In the last 2 minutes, you really turn on the afterburners. Mm-hmm. You take 10 minutes to recover, and then you do that again. I think that's a really great way to practice doing those AMRAPs like you're going to encounter in the open.
Mm-hmm. Right. Like, so the benefit to that is you get to dabble in it a little bit more, right? So if you just do that one Metcon and then you bust, you know, you do the 10-minute AMRAP all out.
What are you busting?
When I say bust, like red line, like, you know, you're done basically. Whereas if, like you said,
busting nuts over here.
I was looking for a wad joke, but yeah.
You bust your wad, whatever you want to call it. You said, you know, maybe do a couple of them and back it off a little bit so you can kind of dabble around in it. It's interval training. It's the same thing.
Yeah. So we were talking about it. So you have interval training for like physiological purposes. You can say we want to do interval training so we can do higher power outputs over and over again. You look at that. What you were just saying before, which I thought was something that doesn't get discussed very often, was the interval training is great for the psychological perspective, the planning, the strategy.
Yeah, yeah. You're just flat practicing more, right? So someone comes to me, I said the analogy earlier, like, hey, I want to be a better basketball player. And my question would be, well, I mean, have you played pickup before? Like, where did you start? Like, where are you at in it? Oh, no, I've never even played with people before. Well, I'm not going to give you like shooting drills and line drills. I'm going to tell you to go play pickup. So like you got to have that. You got to know like where to start and have that balance of the sport specific training as far as sometimes you just need to play. You just need to CrossFit more. And before you start adding all the complex stuff to it, like you said, like the intervals, but sometimes you just got to play more.
Yeah. Pick the low hanging fruit.
Yeah. Just get in and know what it feels like to hurt and make decisions and whatnot.
Yeah. What about those people who tend to redline too easily? People who are going into a 20-minute workout and then in the first 2 minutes they're slobbering all over themselves.
I think it's two things. It's obviously that they're just like you said, physiologically they're just used to going faster, like a sprinter. But also it's mentally too. A lot of people have the mental mindset of getting something done, right? So like some people like to see the finish line. And they want to get there to it as fast as they can. And AMRAPs are bad for that because you can't see the finish line. You have no idea how far you have left to go other than the time. And that's like awful. It's mentally crushing for someone who wants to go fast. So you need to like change that mindset, right? You need to think about, all right, well, I'm this far from the starting line now. And then you look back and you're like, all right, I'm this far now, rather than looking to try and find that finish line because you don't know where it's at. And that can like be demoralizing. You know, for 20 minutes, you're like, oh, crap, I've got so much more to go. Whereas a 3-round for time is so much better mentally.
I know for me, practicing pacing has been a difficult thing for me over the years. Like when I first approached CrossFit, it was all out all the time. And I think that was one of the things that actually kind of hurt me in the long run at a certain point, was just not knowing how to slow it down. I'm one of those people that, well, I'll go all unbroken and then I'll stand there recovering and then go real hard and then stand there recovering, instead of probably the people who perform the best. You know, they're kind of long and steady, slow and steady the whole time. So I personally had a hard time with that. And one of the things that really benefited me is not keep counting too much, like not counting my reps. I mean, you want to count your reps, but not keeping up with like, did I do 7 or 8 rounds? And actually just like maybe taking it, shouldn't do this all the time, but every once in a while, just work for 20 minutes and focus on your pace and don't worry about how many rounds you did.
Yeah.
Just kind of do the work.
Just get the work in.
Yeah. I find that to be really helpful because if you're somebody who's like highly competitive in nature, that's going to be hard.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do for people that are on the opposite end of the spectrum and that they're great at pacing? In fact, it's like almost impossible for them not to pace, it seems like. And they just, when they need to get up and go fast, nothing seems to happen. If they do a 20-minute AMRAP or a 2-minute AMRAP, they pretty much go the same speed.
Seen that a lot.
What do they need to do?
Yeah.
I think most people that are in that camp aren't that strong. Now, I've seen some strong people that do overpace, mm-hmm. but I think more often than not, this is not somebody who's squatting double their body weight.
Yeah, not very powerful, I would say.
Right.
I agree with that. Yeah, you got to, like, how do you teach someone urgency is what you're saying. Like, yeah. You see someone go and you're like, what are you doing? Like, you have a minute left, go. And they're like, I am. Like, no, you're not.
Yeah.
I'm not saying every, like, in a Metcon, obviously you want to end the workout on your back. Like, you know, you want to know that you gave it everything you had and emptied everything out. So you were talking about earlier, mm-hmm. some of the strategies that you have are.
There's a few things I like to do for that. I like to do intervals with those people where they intentionally outrun their own fitness. So,
yeah.
As an example, to make it easy, I like to use like Airdynes and rowers as an example, because there's a measured power output, and so you can really see exactly how hard you're going or how fast you're going. So putting someone on a rower, for example, and just saying, you know, I want you to row 100% full speed and see what they get to. So maybe they run 100% full speed and they get to a 130 pace. And then you can say, as an example, I want you to stay at 90% of that for as long as possible, or just, you know, pick some random number, say I want you to stay below a 135 or stay below a 140 pace for as long as possible. That way they're doing intervals, but they're staying above 90% or whatever percent you want to throw mm-hmm. at them. So there's no opportunity for them to go slow. They have to stay above a certain pace, and then once they fall below that pace, then the interval's over, they take the rest interval, and then they go back into the interval. Airdyne's another easy example. If you get on the Airdyne, you row, you dine.
Yeah.
you cycle as fast as you possibly
kick
can.
Kick and punch.
Yeah, you kick and punch as fast as you possibly can. Maybe you get to, just again to make it easy, you get to 100 RPMs, and that's as fast as you can go. Well, stay above 90 RPMs for as long as possible. If you're staying above 90%, you'll probably stay there for maybe 20 or 30 seconds, something along those lines. And then you can take your rest interval, rest 3 to 5 minutes or whatever you want, and do it again. And if you've ever done that on the Airdyne, staying above 90% for as long as you possibly can are nasty intervals, mm-hmm. especially if you do, you know, 5 or 10.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they'll wipe you out.
You can do that without an Airdyne or rower. One of the things I like to do is do like in 60 seconds. So you have, I like to do this to like 1 to 2 minute wads for those type people. And then obviously as we get closer to the open, I like to move it from a 1 minute closer to a 2 minute mm-hmm. Interval where you're working for 1 to 2 minutes mm-hmm. And then you get like a 3 to 5 minute rest in between each one of those intervals. Mm-hmm. And what I like to do is say in 60 seconds, you're going to do 12 chest to bar pull-ups and you're going to max out on thrusters. Mm-hmm. So that's another measurable thing is like, you can say, okay, I can kind of tell, is like, all right, now they're getting, once you can't get 15 thrusters anymore, you know, the first round you got like 15 thrusters. Mm. Okay, once you fall below 10 thrusters, now it's probably time to cut off that workout, you know, kind of train the sense of urgency. And also that also helps with transitions.
Oh, yeah.
And that was one thing you want to touch on is if you're doing that type of interval where you're in 60 seconds, 15 chest bar pull-ups, now max thrusters, you can't dilly-dally getting on that bar. I mean, you've got to be, you know, if you're really going for as many reps as you can, you've got to practice fast transitions.
Yeah, people aren't used to being a little fatigued and like you said, finish the thrusters and going right back to that pull-up bar. They feel their body kind of in shock and they want to wait. And that's what makes a good athlete, is someone who can just roll with that and use that and go on, even though their body's tired, and telling them, oh, I can't do a pull-up yet. Well, you probably can. You just don't think you can.
Yeah.
Yeah, another thing, a lot of people that aren't good at really picking up and going fast, oftentimes it can be because they think that they're going to outrun their fitness during a Metcon, so they don't want to go so fast that they do
fear.
Fall off.
Yeah.
They're scared they're going to fall off, and they don't want that to happen, and so they don't push it super hard. So a good interval for those people also is to give them something like burpees and say, it doesn't matter how many reps you do. Mm-hmm. That's not the point of this. I want you to go as fast as you can for as long as you can, and you can stop whenever you want. So that way you're not giving someone 50 burpees and they're like, oh, I got to get through all 50 of these. I better pace
myself.
Better
pace it, yep.
You can say, just go as fast as humanly possible. And then once you feel like you start to slow down, then just take a break.
Yep.
And this isn't something you have to do, you know, every week for the rest of your life. Just do it as an exercise, as to give them a new perspective on what it feels like to go as fast as possible. So some people might do like 10 and be like, I think I was starting to slow down. You say, great, take a break and then do it again. And some people might do like 50 and they don't slow down. They didn't know they could do 50 that fast before, and now they do.
Yep.
Or whatever. So giving someone the opportunity to go fast without the fear of I'm going to fall off, because they know they can take that break, is a good way to give them that perspective.
Yeah. Like we that earlier you said, you can't be scared of getting punched in the face. Right?
Oh, yeah.
Like you told the story about the buddy of ours. He basically put his arms around a pole and had someone punch him, and then he's like, "All right, well, now I know what it feels like."
Yeah, we took our buddy Derek, who's an absolute monster. He's a big buff.
Hi, Derek.
Hey, Derek. He's a big buff, good looking guy. I'll throw Derek a bone, and we took him to boxing. And our boxing coach likes to
give him a bone.
Hey, our boxing coach likes to take big, strong guys that think they're pretty tough and to make them not feel so tough. So they took Derek and they wrapped his arms.
Who looks like a big, strong, tough guy?
Yeah, he's massive.
Took him and put his arms around a pole behind his back. And then one of the female, young, like 17-year-old female boxers went over there and just beat up like all of his ribs and in his stomach, and just made him he looked very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Just to give him that experience of what it's like to get beat up, because a lot of big strong guys have never been beat up before, especially by a little girl.
And I bet after training after that, he wasn't so timid anymore. He was loose, and the worst has already happened, kind of thing.
Yeah, after a while, it's just not a big deal.
There's nothing worse than getting punched by a 17-year-old girl and being in pain.
Yeah, so it's a good idea every once in a while, kind of like I said earlier, to outrun your own fitness. Mm-hmm. Get it on Airdyne and just go 100% full speed for as long as you possibly can to intentionally make yourself throw up. Most people never train like that. The goal is to throw up. Sometimes people start CrossFit, they go too hard and they throw up. But after a while, like, when was the last time you threw up?
Long time.
It doesn't happen very often. Like once you really get into this type of training and you're in decent shape, you don't throw up that much anymore.
Yep. I just started thinking about regionals 2009. McGoldrick on the floor.
Wallowing on the ground.
Eating grapes. This dude, all he ate all day was grapes. He's laying on the floor like, just one grape at a time. Like,
they came up.
I came 10 minutes later after eating grapes, he's in the garbage can.
I was laying on the ground. It's my first regional. I'm laying on the ground by the trash can, and they actually had to come up, and they're like, "You have to get out of the way." And I could not move.
Yeah.
I was like, "I don't care. You can walk around me. I'm not moving."
Yeah, McGoldrick was not one of those people that needed to learn how to go hard.
Yeah, I was the opposite.
You know, the opposite.
Yeah, like, chill out.
If you put on 185 on front squat, you can train 185 to failure, to fatigue, where you can't pick up the bar anymore. Mm-hmm. But if you ever tried to do that, like on a prowler, with like 25s on it, where it's light, just push 100% full speed until like you can't push it, mm-hmm. like all the way to fatigue, you'll throw up.
Yeah.
Most people will throw up. So if you haven't done anything like that in a while, it's a good thing to try that every once in a while, to try to make yourself throw up. After you're not a beginner anymore, once in a while, that's a good thing to try to do.
Once in a while.
Once in a while. Yeah. That's a grind to do all the time.
All right, guys, we're going to take a break real quick. When we come back, we're going to talk about some of the mental preparation strategies for competing in things like the Open.
Breathe with the muscles under your ribs. Push out.
And we're live.
Use those intercostals.
And we're back.
And we're back.
Oh, that's you.
When we interviewed Kelly Starr, he really threw me off with that. I was about to go back. We were about to come on, and he goes, "And we're back." Like, before we came back, I was like,
I'll take over my show.
Like, did you pee on him?
I was like,
my house.
That's right.
My house.
Well, we were in his gym, so I was like, I couldn't like pee on him.
You're thinking, he took over Joe's show. Is he going to take over our show?
I was like, is he getting in my head? Is he in my head? He's like, he's freaking me out, man. Yeah.
If you're wondering if he's in your head.
He's in your head. He's
like, shit. He's swimming in your dome.
That's that. Out of almost 100 episodes, no one got in my head except mm-hmm. for Kelly. Well, congratulations. All right. We're going to get talking about the mental side. Oh, before we go any further.
After all that, we're talking about mental strength. Mike doesn't have it.
I'm going to talk about it.
That's right. This is for McGoldrick, not me. But before that, I want to say thanks to Charles over at YouTube, who gave us a tour when we were in San Jose last. And he hooked us up with these sweet mugs.
Thanks, Charles. Yeah.
Jinx, you owe me a soda, Doug.
Ah, busted.
All right.
Holy shit.
All right. So, when we were preparing for the show, we're doing some show notes. Talking about mental preparation. What are some things that you encounter personally when you're doing the Open?
Well, two things. Like, I think that to get better, to Metcon faster, which is the topic, you can increase, you know, your physical capacity and your mental capacity. I think it divides into those two. So starting with mental capacity, we've got, you got to have a plan going into each workout, right? So you want to have, you know, your 80% rule, like have an idea, have a plan. Mm-hmm.
And it, Do you have to stick with the plan? Or is it just important to have
No,
the
that's
plan?
The thing. A good athlete is someone who can call.
Because we planned this episode, we haven't done shit right.
Yeah, but that's what makes you guys good, you know, like podcasters or whatever. You call an audible, right? You just roll with it. Like, you get punched in the face and you move on.
A lot of audibles on this.
A lot of audibles. So, yeah, but you got to know, like, when to change your plan, obviously. But stick to it. And there's so many little things, like especially the open, because most of the open workouts are all about pacing. Like, if you have a good pace, that's why every time someone redoes it, they usually do better.
Because they learn. I was going to ask you, how do you feel about repeating the WOD or doing it on a Wednesday? Say they release it on Tuesday night, Wednesday, and then doing it on Wednesday or Thursday so that you can do it on Saturday. You think it's good to know that you can do it a second time?
You know what? It depends. It depends what your goal is. If your goal is to do as good as you can in the open, I hate when I hear people say, there's no redos at regionals. Well, that's great if you're trying to be a regional qualifier, if you're trying to be like a CrossFit Games competitor because you're training for unknown and unknowable and you deal with whatever's thrown at you. But most people aren't. Most people are trying to do the best they can in the open. So there's no problem with redoing it. Who cares? It's just for 5 weeks. Redo it. Learn. Do it again. Learn more. I think the more CrossFit you're doing, you're going to keep learning each time you do it. So, no, I have no problem with it. I think it's great.
Yeah. The only thing I would say in regard to that is if you don't go into it with enough training volume and say you do something on Thursday, you might still be wrecked
yeah.
for this particular, and, that particular workout and those movements.
And it obviously depends on the workout, too. Like, yeah. So, like the snatch burpee workout, a lot of people redid and did better just because they're like, I did the burpees too fast, or I did touch and goes on the snatches because I saw Rich Froning do touch and goes. Mm-hmm. And they should not have done touch and goes. They should have done singles the whole time. Whereas another workout might be the thruster chest to bar one.
Oh, yeah.
Chest to bar pull up one.
Sense of urgency on that one. Man, for the 13.5.
Yeah, yeah, you know, but most people, a lot of people that didn't redo that because they're like, I mean, there really wasn't a huge limiter other than chest bars, and you can only do as many chest bars as you can do.
Well, you have to go pretty much as fast as you can out the gate, or else you're not going to get very far in that workout because it was
maybe
three rounds in 4 minutes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So if chest to bar pull-ups aren't something that limit you, yeah, go out hard. But if they are, the workout is all about how well you pace your chest to bar pull-ups. Because mm-hmm. if you go out and you do too many too fast that first minute, you know, you're screwed. Like, you blew up, and now you've whatever you call it, blew your wad. there's your drop. So, yeah, it depends on the athlete, depends on where their limiter is. And having a mental game plan, like we talked about, like, and stick to it. Sometimes you get in it, and you're like, this isn't working. I had planned to do touch and goes, and I'm tired. Well, you're not going to keep doing it and getting more tired. You change the plan and you go to something that works. That goes in line next with breathing, right? So find movements that are difficult to breathe in and practice finding ways to make them easy to breathe during. So like burpees. I'm a big fan of like the step down burpee, right? So
not kind of like step up box jumps if you have the choice between step ups.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
or jumping. I think most athletes found that step-ups were better.
Why is it easier? It's the same movement, right? You're just getting from A to B, but why is it easier to step up? It's just because you can breathe better during that somehow. Yeah. Same with burpees. Like, people think I'm injured sometimes when I'm doing a burpee. No, that's like a way I found that I can keep moving on them without like having to take breaks. Like, doing burpees should be as easy as going out for a jog if you can breathe correctly. Same with double unders. You know, you should be able to just work and do them. It should be like running.
How do you feel about those burpees? Say, remember the, I think it was last year, they did 7 minutes of burpees with a 6-inch target, so you had to jump. How do you feel about doing that version of the burpee for like just a very short AMRAP like that?
What do you mean? Short. I'm sorry.
Well, are you talking about pacing the burpees on, say, that the snatch and burpee wad where you're having a transition between two and it's a lot of high reps in between each one and it's a little bit longer duration? I forget how long that one was. But there was also one a year and a half ago. Sorry, I'll try it. In 2012.
Mm-hmm.
It was max burpees in 7 minutes. Would you still approach those burpees the same way? Or would it being sprinting, as more of a sprint, are you popping off the ground?
No, I paced those big time.
Okay.
Yeah. A lot of people went out fast and they did, you know, like 30 the first minute and they only got 70 more the next 6 minutes. Like, you have to pace that. Yeah.
Yeah. If you're going to run a 1 mile for time. It's and the same. Normally it takes you around 7 minutes, like that 7 minute AMRAP. You wouldn't run the first 400 meters as fast as humanly possible.
It's the same thing. It's just a different movement. You know what I mean? Yep. Same strategy.
Go fast at the end. So a minute ago you were talking about breathing. They don't know how to breathe, but like that's a hard thing to describe. I would imagine you got to have the experience of not knowing how to breathe, and then someday have the experience of breathing better, whatever the hell that means. Mm-hmm. Can you attempt to describe what that means, or what doing it wrong and doing it right looks like?
Yeah. So you want to avoid that like red line, that huff and puff. But there's also a balance of it. Like sometimes you can't try and fight that breathing. Like sometimes you just need to accept that you're breathing heavy and just let yourself breathe heavy. Mm-hmm. But what I mean by like the burpees is finding ways where you don't have to stop and take a break. Whereas like if you're doing thrusters, you can only do so many thrusters till you have to stop and take a break, even if it's lightweight. Mm-hmm. But some people can get really good at it to where they can treat a thruster. They get like in a rhythmic or a cyclical breathing pattern, like you're on a rower. A rower, you don't have to stop and take a break. If you can translate that over into burpees or any other compound movement like a wall ball or thrusters, like that's really beneficial.
What kind of approach do you take when trying to teach yourself to breathe?
How do I do it?
Yeah. Say on wall ball shots, because I think that one gets a lot of people.
Wall ball shot, man, I'm going to say thrusters, because wall balls, I've never really had trouble breathing. It always comes down to just shoulder endurance.
Right.
But like thrusters, I learned how to take a breath overhead and at the bottom. So I'm in and out, in and out, in and out, in and out, right?
Two breaths,
right. So that starts with lightweight, 10 thrusters on the minute for however long you can do it, that kind of thing. So you're not necessarily maxing out on it, but you're also getting enough training in where it's slightly fatiguing, but you're getting some rest as well. So a little bit of work rest, even Tabata would work fine, that kind
of
thing.
And so a lot of people on thrusters, they're thinking about technique. They're thinking about trying to keep their torso as upright as possible and getting the right depth and hitting the right position overhead. But you're taking the technique a step further and building the breathing into
it. It's not a barbell. It's a barbell movement. It's not a weightlifting or a speed movement at that point. Right now, it's a rhythmic. It's a cyclical movement. You need to treat it like
If you're strong enough,
you need to treat it like you're. Yeah, you need to treat it like you're rowing or you're out for a run. I see that go a long way.
So you think people who aren't as strong, maybe on the front squat, if they want to work on breathing during thrusters, it would probably be beneficial to take the weight down. It might, if you're only front squatting 200 pounds and 95 pound thruster, you're never going to get that rhythmic breathing with that weight.
Right. It's two different movements. Doing five touch and go snatches is different from doing five snatch singles at a heavy weight. Right. You want it's like a fluent movement. Right. You're not going to snatch that way if you're trying to get stronger.
So once you kind of like nail a thruster and you got good positioning throughout the thruster and stuff like that, then I guess the next step in working on improved thruster technique is the breathing portion, which I don't think many people think about very much at all.
No, yeah.
Yeah, I think if you just tell people to think about their breathing, that changes everything.
I watch people.
Like, breathe here, don't breathe here. But I think it's more about just, hey, by the way, think about breathing.
Yeah, you see people, a light go off, and I'm saying, like, they're doing the thrusters, and I'm like, breathe. And they go, oh. I mean, they're doing five thrusters, and they just forget to breathe. And that just comes with practice. It's just doing the sport more,
I feel like breathing's talked about a lot more like in the bodybuilding world where like someone's doing a bench press and they're like, all right, breathe in on the way down, breathe out on the way up.
Yep.
Well,
maybe
we'll need to copy that advice word for word, but that's something that could be brought to more people's attention in the CrossFit world where there's certain times where it's okay to hold your breath. There's certain times where it's okay to take a deep breath. You're not going to lose stability or bounce or whatever you want to say. So you're talking about trying to find a very relaxed cyclical pattern of breathing where you can not have to like take a break, where if someone's doing like an overhead squat where they don't have to go like
yep, exactly. You need to learn to breathe during those movements.
Yeah.
Whereas if I'm doing a 1 RM a 1 rep max thruster, I'm not breathing at all. I'm holding my breath the whole time. Mm-hmm. But if I'm doing a set of 10 thrusters, that kind of thing, I'm finding a way to keep it where I can you know, breathe, like I'm out for a jog or something.
So that's a really good point. Like a lot of people, they really think about the breathing a lot when they're doing something like a one rep max. They'll take a big deep breath, hold it on the way down, hold it on most of the way up. Once they get past sticking point, they might breathe out. But if it's not a one rep max, then kind of like you were saying, it's okay to be more relaxed and have that whatever pattern you were talking about. On a thruster, you tend to breathe out as you press and then breathe in.
At the bottom.
You breathe in at the when the weight's on your shoulders,
in and out,
you're standing
in and out,
or at the bottom?
In and out at the bottom and in and out at the top.
Okay.
So two breaths per rep. Mm-hmm. Which sounds like a lot because that's a fast movement.
He's a two-breath man.
kind of going back to the mental side of things, you know, I think breathing is one of those huge things that changes between training and competition. And a lot of people get a little, frazzled when they show up to a meet and there's a lot of people and there's a judge involved now. And this is game day. And then they may have practiced a lot of that breathing. And I think breathing is probably the first thing to go when you do get in that competition environment. What are some ways that we can kind of practice maybe competing and kind of putting pressure on ourselves so that we can kind of maintain control in any environment?
Yeah, I think pulling out the camera is a great way to do it because, you know, you put yourself on camera, you're more likely to hold yourself accountable. What was another one? Having a training partner there or having someone judge you, that kind of thing.
Yeah, the way that we've been describing it is doing something like a scrimmage. Like if you play soccer, you'll have a scrimmage at the end of practice where you're playing a soccer game against your own teammates. And it matters, but it doesn't really matter. Kind of the same thing in the cross world. You could do a scrimmage against yourself where you do record it and you do get your buddy to judge you. And maybe you ask a few of your teammates or your wife or your girlfriend or your coach or somebody to sit there and watch the whole workout where there's a little bit of pressure on you and it matters. And everyone's going to know if you did or didn't do a full rep. Maybe you have the whole audience. If you know rep, they all yell no rep.
Yeah.
Right. You have five people yell no rep at you. And like, there's no getting away with it. You can't trick yourself into thinking you did a full rep at something that maybe chest of bar pull-ups where occasionally you miss, but you count it anyway and you want it and you don't tell anybody.
Taking the video.
So doing a scrimmage is an easy way that you can do like on a systematic week by week basis that whenever you do a tester, put some accountability in place and have people watch you, have people judge you, record it like you were saying.
Yeah. You could take it further. And not just, when you do record it, put it on Facebook, put it on, you know, if you're training.
Yeah, that's a great one.
If you're doing blog programming and you're training with another group of people, throwing that video up in the comments on the blog. I know for us, we have the Road to Regionals group prepping for the Open, and then we have the 6-month muscle gain. When they do workouts, it's good to post, you know, your workout on the wall. And then I've seen this before on certain blogs, but someone posts that and they go, oh, you missed, you didn't do as many reps as you thought you had done.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where it keeps you honest the next time around.
Yeah. If you're not posting that stuff or putting yourself out there, I mean, you might be just a little afraid of criticism and you can't be. Like, be open to it. It's going to help you. It's going to help you grow. It's going to help you progress.
What about warm-ups for these different workouts? So during the Open, the way you warm up for maybe a 5-minute workout, I think it's going to be different than a 20-minute workout. How do yours change, Mike?
Yeah, I mean, the shorter the workout, the longer the warm-up usually. You got to get the heart rate up. I'm a big fan of getting up, like say you're going to do your Open workout at Saturday at noon. I'm a big fan of getting up early that morning and getting moving because that way – when you if you get up and go for a 10-minute run, then have your breakfast, take your shower, do whatever. Mm-hmm. Everything's already going. You feel awake. Then you get to the gym. You're gonna warm up a lot faster. You're already gonna be somewhat awake. So you have kind of like a pre-warm up. I'm a big fan of that. Okay. I see a lot of people go into the gym, an hour before they've got to do the best score of their life on an Open workout, and they just can't get going. And then it's 20 minutes, so they go, and they kind of stretch a little bit. And, you got to have a plan. You got to plan your warm-up just as if you would have a plan for your workout. So
how high do you like to get your heart rate prior to, say, a 5-minute workout?
5-minute workout? I mean, I want to be, like, hurting. I want to get some blood, plenty of blood flowing. I want to be in a little bit of pain just so that –
say like maybe 180 beats per minute ish.
I don't monitor my heart rate like that. So yeah, I would say. But my point is I'll get touch on at least as high as it's going to get in the workout because you don't want that to be a shock, right? So you're doing a 5-minute workout. You don't want to start the 5-minute workout and then that be the first time that day that you got to that point, because you're going to be like, oh shit, I'm not ready. You're going to start doubting. You're going to think, am I warm up? Should I just stop and start over?
What kind of tools do you use? Do you use the movements in the workout? Do you use the Airdyne, rower? Do
you it depends, use you know. Different? Yeah, it depends on the movements, obviously. I'll give you a better answer. Sorry. I'm a big fan of rower and Airdyne. Airdyne, especially, you know, with the wintertime, it's cold. Like, it's constant output. It's twice as fast to get warm on an Airdyne than it is a rower. Big warm-up that I like to do, or one of my favorites, is 5-minute Airdyne, sprint the last 10 seconds of each minute. You know, that's like a fail-safe that I go to Very all cool. the time, you know. Sometimes I go in, I just don't really know where to start. Just get on, sit for 5 minutes, and sprint for 10 seconds at the end of each minute. You'll be plenty warm. You'll be plenty warm at the end of it, and you can do it every time. And it's not going to make you tired. So it's better to go in. People think, well, I don't want to get too warm. You're not going to get too warm and wear yourself out. Now, if you do, like, if you're about to do a workout that's got muscle-ups in it and you're so nervous and you end up doing 30 muscle-ups before you do the workout. Yeah, like, I know. Like,
you, stop.
Yeah, you know. So you want to be confident in the movements that you're doing, but the heart rate is one of the most important things, getting your body ready for that.
Yeah, it's all set on under the assumption that you have enough time in between your warm-up and the workout. You're not warming up and then like, all right, just got off the Airdyne, and they're like, all right, 3, 2, 1, go, and then right, jump right into right. it. Like, you have a good solid 10
But how many times how many times has that ever happened? Has that ever happened to you guys?
What?
Where you warmed up too much and then went into the workout and you're like, oh, I didn't. No, that's never happened to me. I always have that.
You were tired from the warm-up.
Yeah, I always have that fear, but it's not going to happen. It's what's going to happen is that you're going to feel good, you know, but you're not going to be in the workout and be like, I didn't rest long enough between my.
Too many butt kickers today. What?
Yeah, that's not gonna happen.
Yeah, 99% of the time I did not warm up enough.
It's funny though.
If I'm thinking about warm up regrets, it's because it wasn't enough. Happens a lot in wrestling tournaments. They're tough. Nah, you do a jiu-jitsu tournament or something like that, and it's like, I don't know where I'm gonna go. Bledsoe, you're up. It's like, shit. I've been warming up for 1 minute. This is not good. And then you're in a fight for your life. Not fun. So
I got called that one time when I was sleeping. They're like, Larson, third call. Like, you're about to skip my match. And I was like, oh man. I just walked in there and was just like, okay, go. And it wasn't until the third round that I felt like I was actually performing like I'm supposed to perform.
Yeah. So in CrossFit, things usually run pretty close to schedule, and it's not a surprise. So you don't have an excuse. Not like wrestling tournaments. It's an all day deal where you never know when you get called for like 12 hours. Yep. So, I don't know. Went off on a tangent. Sorry.
No, sorry. I really think that improving your mental game is just as important, and it never comes to an end point. You're never going to figure it out and master that. Like, you can get really good at it, because I'm still learning. Like, every time I do a CrossFit workout,
You're one of the best.
No,
I'm just fucking with you.
Every time I do a CrossFit workout now, I'm still learning stuff. I'm still like, okay, and now I know next time I'll do this. It never stops. I hear people say all the time, like, Rich Froning, for example, he's just so much mentally stronger than everyone. Like, I mean, he probably is. It's a combination. It's physical and his mental game is ridiculous. But
I mean, you could argue his physiology follows his mental. Like, because he's so mentally tough, he can train at this higher pace.
Yeah, like,
which means that his physiology is going to change and adapt.
Everyone at that level is mentally tough. If you're there, you're mentally tough. My point is like, there are probably people who are way less fit than me that are way more mentally tough than me. Does that mean that? I mean, but you could argue and say, oh, they're just not pushing hard enough. No, like, their body's just not there yet. Like, they could be crazy, you know, but they just physically can't do some things.
All right, for the 20 minute AMRAP. You know, how do you approach that warm up?
Once again,
how's that different than a short?
I actually, for a 20-minute AMRAP, I spend more time than most people would getting warm, because I like to, I want to at least work for 5 minutes at the pace that I'm going to do in that workout. So like, you want to have the aerobic system warmed up, because if it's 20 minutes long, most of the time it's going to be something pretty aerobic, unless it's like a snatch burpee that just hurts the whole time. It's right. aerobic, but it's painful too.
Yeah.
It's not really like sustainable. Something like the snatch burpee workout, you need to warm up a little different for, because that one, all you're in pain right off the bat, you know, like you're in pain right off the bat and you need to deal with that. But like box jump, push press, wall ball workout, something where you can just breathe the whole time. I want to work like 4 to 5 minutes at that pace and have my heart moving and where I'm really comfortable with that, to where I can just, I know like right now it's the same as me going and running a 5K. I feel the same way.
How do you handle taking breaks during the workout? Like if you're doing a set of 10 on push press and it's decently heavy, after 5 reps, you drop the bar. Like, what are you thinking then? What do you do? Are you like saying, okay, 5 seconds, I'm going to go, or I'm going to take 3 breaths, I'm going to go? Like, what do you normally do?
Yeah, I try and take emotion out of it. So don't settle with making deals with yourself. What I mean by that is like, you're like, oh my God, it's starting to burn. I need to drop at 5. Okay, I'm going to drop at 5. Have numbers in your head and stick to it. So I'm going to do 5. I'm going to count 3 seconds. I'm going to get back on it. Get on a rhythm like that, right? Be on a system. Mm-hmm. And then you'll start to learn that you can kind of, I mean, you can always do more than you think. It's mm-hmm. mind blowing how powerful the mind is and how weak it can make you sometimes. So let's say that I'm doing a workout that's got 100 push press for time. My goal going in is I'm going to do 10 sets of 10, right? All right. Well, I might in the workout, I might change it up and go, hell, if I do 11, right now, that's one less set at the end, mm-hmm. right? By the time I get there, I've done 99 reps. I only had to do 9 sets. So you'd be surprised just adding like a little bit at a time and changing things. Or when you drop the bar, you might go, all right, I'm going to go back at 5, 4, 3, 2, go back at 2, right? Trick yourself, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. That's another game I like to play. Mm-hmm. Rather than, you know, you already said, okay, I'm going to go back in 5 seconds. Like, just go 1 second earlier, you know. Don't make deals with yourself. That's how you're going to progress and push through those little barriers.
Is there a point ever where you think, okay, I'm not going to go all the way to failure, all the way to fatigue. I'm going to go 2 reps shy of failure or 3 reps shy of failure. Do you think about like that?
Oh,
ever?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And that's just smart pacing, because if you're worried about going to failure, yeah, you want to stay just below that threshold, that red line. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah, I see people do that a lot where they have to do 20 pull-ups in a row, 20 chest bar pull-ups, and they'll do 9, and that's like as many as they could do, and then they'll do like 4, and then they'll do like 2, and then they'll do singles sloppy until they get done.
Yeah.
Like, in your opinion, should they do like 4 sets of 5 and not go to failure, or since they did 9 and I said to go 2 shy of failure, should they do 7-7-7 or 7-7-6 in that case, since it's 20?
That, once again, that just comes with practice. So if the workout is 50 chest to bar pull-ups for time, you're done when that last pull-up is done. So mm-hmm. you don't want to go out and do as many as you can right off the bat, right? You got to think about, how can I break this down to do the fastest 50 I can? Mm-hmm. So that might be do 10 before failure. You know what I mean? Like, so stop 10 reps before failure. Mm-hmm. So that way you can do another big set. So now you've got 40 done. Mm-hmm. Well, now you've got 10 reps left. Do 10 singles if it's fast. Mm-hmm. What you don't want to do is do the 20 and then 20, do 5, and then wait till you can do 5 more. That's stupid. Just keep going, right? Mm-hmm. Just do 10 singles. Yeah. So, but if you have 100 wall ball after that, mm-hmm. yeah, you might want to break it up and do small sets so you can get to the wall ball fresh, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I don't think you should go to fatigue at all during a longer Metcon. Easy example there is the guy that set the world record for pull-ups in 24 hours. I forget what he did. He did like...
Probably really small.
15,000. Actually, I think he was taller. He was like 6'4".
No. I'm saying his sets were probably really small.
Oh, yeah. He's probably a really small person.
He's totally small, no, man.
You're exactly right, though. He did. He did like sets of 3 with a 20-second break in between 3 strict dead hang pull-ups. And he just did that for like 24 hours. He would like do 3 pull-ups. And then like take a bite of a sandwich. And then like do 3 more pull-ups. And he just did that for 24 hours straight.
He ate a sandwich? Oh my god!
That comes with being an athlete. That comes with being
something.
That comes with being an athlete.
Man,
like,
I want a sandwich.
You can see like who.
Just think, if you didn't eat that bread, even though, you know.
I love sandwiches. I love them.
What's the gluten-free bread you eat?
Udi's.
Udi's. It's just delicious.
Huge fan.
You gave some of their bagels.
Sponsor
awesome.
Of mine. Yeah.
We like Udi's.
Hey man, I delicious need some bagels. Of that Udi's stuff, man.
But
we
gotta
be real quick. All right, yeah, sorry.
So back to, that comes with self-control. Like, you see someone that's got to do, you even saw regional athletes do it. No, the hundreds workout. Like, you know, everyone knew that you had to have a plan as far as your strategy going into that. And some people, you get adrenaline going, you get the environment around you, like things change and you just start going. And then you're doing, you're like, I can't stop. I want to, but I can't. Like, you got to have the self-control. And, you know, just because you feel good at that moment doesn't mean you're going to feel like that the whole workout. So save it.
I just think about the first time I ever competed.
Yeah.
In CrossFit, it was fucking, it was stupid.
Do tell.
Just all out the gate.
Oh,
the
yeah.
It was like, there was no consideration, no planning whatsoever. I was like, I'll just beat everybody. That was the plan.
Yeah, you need a mix of that. You need a mix of that.
All right, guys, we're going to wrap it up. Mike, do you want to mention any of your sponsors real quick? You got Udi's, right? What else?
Udi's, Glutino, all Boulder Brand products. Huge fan. They treat me really well. Boulder Brands is out of Boulder, Colorado. A lot of gluten-free products. Udi's makes awesome stuff. They've got like great muffins, all kinds of breads. I can eat sandwiches all day long now. Don't give me any stomach problems.
You pick up your Udi's stuff at Whole Foods.
Yeah, Kroger's got it too.
Kroger.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Big selection there. So, I want to thank BSC for providing me with my winter gear. Awesome Body Science Compression. They've got great tights and compression gear. Really good for the winter time right now. Big fan of their stuff. So, and go to mobilitykits.com. Sign up for our newsletter.
Oh yeah, oh, my business.
Yeah, yeah.
Your business. Yeah.
Oh man, what's the new? Might even add this little guy to the.
We need a camera
to the kit. Might there even add is. This little guy to the kit. It's a little stick on thing here. It's a tripod, so you can film your workouts wherever you're at.
And that is pretty cool for how simple and cheap and easy that is.
Yeah, it's amazing. And I want to thank Barbell Shrug for having me again. I love talking about CrossFit.
Yay! And if you want to see McGoldrick's mobility kit, it looks a little bit like this.
Yep.
You can open it up, boop, and then you on the inside, you've got it. I still got some stuff in there.
Yeah, all-inclusive kit. It comes with it's got a roller, a band, a peanut, which is two lacrosse balls and a sleeve, and a massaging stick.
You can put your weed in there, man.
What's cool about this is
it's your bonus gift.
Is it's you don't have to have a peanut and a lacrosse ball.
Yeah,
it's kind of all in one.
It's got space. Put other stuff in there as well.
You sold out right now.
Your
still?
Jump rope? No, I'm back in stock.
Very cool.
Got back plenty. In stock. If you go to mobilitykits.com, you can order one of these for yourself. I keep one of these every time I travel. It goes in the bag. Love having it, especially when you travel, man. Sometimes the next morning, been on a plane for like 6 hours, mm-hmm. and you get out and you're a little sticky. You can roll it out.
A little sticky.
I feel like you're obviously having fun with me lately.
I feel like you're always sold out. You're like, I made 100 of them, but someone bought them all. You're like, they're like always gone like that. I 100 more.
I just restocked and they're over halfway gone now. So.
Damn.
It's a good problem to have.
They're going quick.
All right. Make sure you go over to barbellstrug.com, sign up for that newsletter, and we will see you next week.
Peace. Thanks, Mike.
Shock of bras. All right, Mike, intro. Yay.